I would like to introduce Professor Jesus Medina, the former chairman at the University of Oklahoma, member of the American Board of Otolaryngology, and president of the Triologic Society, for the presidential address. Physicians as teachers, are we ready for changing times?
Thank you, Bob. Well, what a distinct pleasure it is to see so many familiar faces at this meeting of the sections of the Triological Society. And before I begin my remarks this morning, please allow me to express my sincere appreciation to all of you for bestowing on me the incomparable honor of being your president this year. I would also like to acknowledge and thank my wife, Libby, who is here with me today. Her unconditional and loving support and honest criticisms have been my biggest asset for the past 35 years. I love you, sweetheart. You know, from the time I was a resident and I presented my very first paper at the meeting of the middle section in Milwaukee, of all places, these meetings have been among my favorites. So it is a special honor to stand here today as a guest of the vice presidents of all four sections. In these meetings, I have listened to and participated in a variety of discussions like the ones you just heard from our guest of honor so eloquently presented. Those interactions have taught me a great deal, and when I consider them in the light of the collegial atmosphere of this society and my personal association with many of you over the years, I have an abundance of reasons to be grateful to this outstanding organization. As you know, one of the privileges of being the president is the opportunity to bring to the fore important, perhaps timely issues, and maybe even point the way ahead in certain areas. So to that end, I would like to focus my remarks today on the role of otolaryngology clinicians as teachers, as educators, and address our readiness for change. To do so, allow me to pose two questions, elaborate on three current realities, and suggest four possible ways forward. The first and most essential question is this: why should we talk about education? We've talked about patient care and research this morning. Well, let's face it, most otolaryngologists in academic medicine and many clinicians in private practice are constantly teaching. We may be teaching medical students, our residents, fellows, our nurses, our mid-level practitioners that work with us, and last but not least, we may be teaching our patients or even ourselves. Part of our calling is to be educators. As I'm sure you know, the word doctor comes from the Latin word docere, which means to teach. By definition, then, we are teachers. And for centuries now, we have sworn to uphold this obligation when we recite the Hippocratic Oath on the day of our graduation, and we pledge to gladly share such knowledge as is mine with those who are to follow. Given this, the next question we should consider is, why is it our obligation? Why do we teach? And as I pondered this question over the past several weeks, I found that a poem by Will Allen Drumwell encapsulated beautifully the answer I was looking for. It is called The Bridge Builder, and it goes this way. An old man going along highway came at the evening cold and gray to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The sullen stream held no fears for him. But he turned when safe on the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. "Old man," cried a fellow pilgrim near, "you're wasting your time building in here. You have crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you this bridge at eventide?" The builder lifted his old great head. Good friend, in the path I have come, he said, there followeth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. This stream, which has been as naught to me, to that hair-fair youth may pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building this bridge for him. My friends and colleagues, this is why we physicians teach. We build bridges for those who follow after us. And we have done it very well for many years, as evidenced by the quality of the residents that we graduate year after year. However, the educational environment is changing, perhaps more drastically than ever before. And I wonder if we are doing enough to get ready, to update our old methods so that we can continue to build the right bridges for our young now and in the future. From my perspective as an otolaryngologist with over three decades of experience teaching and training residents and fellows while taking care of patients, I would like to discuss three significant changes in the education environment. And if nothing else, I hope that addressing these new realities will stimulate fruitful discussions about our preparedness as physician educators. The first relatively new reality, which has had a significant impact on resident training, is the evolving duty hour restrictions. Much has been written about this topic. Suffice it to say that resident work hour regulations were long overdue, they're here to stay, and they're likely to be reduced further in the future. There is no question that work hour restrictions have resulted in improved quality of life for residents. However, the impact on their training resulting from these new regulations is still being debated. Some surveys suggest that these regulations have had a negative impact on training, while others suggest they have not. What is undeniable, however, is that the amount of time available for residents to have direct interaction with faculty for teaching and training has decreased. A second undeniable and pertinent reality is the evolution of generational priorities. Some of the values of today's residents and fellows are different from those of their predecessors. These physicians insist on having a balanced lifestyle that allows more time with family, as well as more free time to pursue personal interests. This is a good thing, balanced lifestyle, personal interests. However, in combination with duty hour restrictions, it creates a phenomenon I call displacement of reading time. And let me explain. In my day, residents were on call every third or fourth day. We took call in the hospital. And the truth is that we were not always busy. The requirement to stay away from home and loved ones, usually sequestered in a Spartan call room, gave many of us precious time to read and study. Today, as a result of the changes we have implemented to comply with duty hour regulations, residents no longer take call in the hospital. They now take call at home. I hope you would agree with me that being at home brings about opportunities to spend that not always busy on-call time doing a variety of other things, many of which are far more fun than reading and studying. And when we add that to the fact that this generation of physicians in training is expected to share more in household chores and child rearing than previous generations, there can be no argument that these activities compete with, and more often than not, displace reading and study time. These two realities parallel the third, which is an inevitable truth about our specialty. The scope of knowledge and technology in otolaryngology continues to expand. Now, given these three significant changes, I must confess, I wonder if any individual training under our current guidelines is realistically able to master in 5 years the continuum from otology to rhinology to allergy to pediatric otolaryngology down to head, neck, and now sleep disorders. The bottom line is the math, and I believe it matters. The reality, the arithmetic, if you will, is that the amount of time available for teaching and training has decreased while the amount of material and skills to be mastered has increased. These issues are made more relevant to our conversation today when we consider that most otolaryngologists lack any formal education in effective teaching strategies or on the nuances of adult education. In addition, it is undeniable that the motivation and enthusiasm to teach have been diminished by the pressure on faculty time that results from a heavy burden on patient care, by the increasing need to rely on clinical productivity to ensure an adequate income, and by the fact that it is becoming increasingly more difficult to teach surgical skills by practicing on patients. Let us face it, teaching in the operating room takes time, a reality that is in conflict with the current emphasis on fiscal restraint and on work hour regulations. All of these forces create an ethical dilemma. The dilemma for us clinicians of balancing these new realities with our calling and commitment to teach. So what can we do? And I'm not here to offer a comprehensive reform plan for otolaryngology. However, I know that there are two options that are clearly impractical, cannot do. We cannot increase the duration of training in otolaryngology. We cannot change the structure of training in otolaryngology to allow for early subspecialization or tracking, at least not at this time. Unless things have changed drastically, in a survey taken by the American Board of Otolaryngology 2 to 3 years ago, program directors were overwhelmingly opposed to the idea of early subspecialization. I believe, however, that early subspecialization and tracking will happen in the not-so-distant future. Then there are some steps that we might be able to take, and I'd like to suggest four possible ways forward. As you know, this is the schema of training in otolaryngology with 5 years of residency and in some cases 1 or 2 years of fellowship. Well, I believe that in cooperation with the ACGME, we could use the 4th year of medical school towards PGY1 credit. A flexible use of the final year of medical school would focus in part on ensuring the acquisition of some of the knowledge and skills necessary for entering residency in otolaryngology. In fact, some of the rotations of the PG1 year, such as critical care, anesthesia, emergency medicine, could be easily done on the 4th year of medical school. And this would not only provide a better transition into residency, but it would increase the time available for training in otolaryngology without increasing the overall length of training. Obviously, this would take some time. In the meantime, there are 3 other additional ways forward that we can and must implement now. First, we must guide our residents so that they can maximize the efficiency of their learning. This requires that we have a working understanding of the learning style of individuals. And you may be familiar with the Kolb Learning Style Inventory, which categorizes individuals into 1 of 4 learning styles depending on certain learning modes. And I'm not going to discuss each one of these learning styles. But in a recent study by Diaz et al., 45% of otolaryngology residents and fellows tested exhibited a convergent learning style. And why might this be useful to know? Well, I'll let you be the judge. Individuals who exhibit this convergent style learn best by performing assigned tasks as individuals with assistance from an instructor as needed. But for these learners, group projects and discussions are considered a burden. In other words, for these individuals, didactic lectures and brainstorming sessions are not useful. Intuitively, then, helping each resident identify how he or she learns best would be useful. But equally, or perhaps more important, understanding these differences by the faculty and the powers that be, such as the Residency Review Committee, might lead to the acceptance and eventually to the requirement of flexibility in our didactics. We need to stop forcing everyone to attend our lectures. In an environment of decreasing study time and increasing material to be mastered, 45%, that 45% of residents with a convergent learning style cannot afford to daydream through lectures and then have to find another time that they can learn their own best way. Which brings us to the next step we must take. We must optimize the learning opportunities for our trainees by expanding these opportunities from lectures and tutorials that are often held in an inflexible time and a uniform way to a variety of e-learning techniques. And I know this is already taking place, but what frustrates me is that the pace is entirely too slow. Appropriate e-learning packages can be used as needed and at the convenience of the learners. Doing this can go a long way towards easing the pressure on time for both the clinicians trying to impart their knowledge and the residents trying to acquire it. We must also develop training opportunities outside of the operating room using simulators, artificial body parts, and animal models. And I honestly envision the day when a hands-on assessment of such skills will be required before a trainee is permitted to operate on a patient. Last but not least, we must maximize the effectiveness of our teaching, which I believe is in everyone's best interest. We know that the ability to teach comes naturally to some, I would say few of us, as a gift that we're ready to give away from the get-go. But for most of us have some innate skills that can stand to be awakened or improved. More often than not, and regardless of our basic ability, the preparation to teach occurs as an on-the-job training by trial and error. And unfortunately, this type of preparation is empiric, usually takes a long time, and often results in a rigid learning style. I would submit to you that we can no longer afford this type of preparation. If we are to meet these new realities and the changing needs of our trainees, I believe the time has come for the preparation of clinicians to teach to become a required systematic effort that leads clinicians to understand the latest developments in the education theory and practice and to incorporate them into our training programs. And I would submit to you only one example of such a systematic effort, the Training the Trainers course that was developed by the Royal College of Surgeons of England to help develop surgeons as educators. And here are just a few of the objectives of this two-day course. Acknowledge differences in learning styles, be able to relate learning domains to surgery, describe, effectively use, and understand various teaching methods. The end product of this type of educational program is a knowledgeable, open-minded, and flexible teacher who knows about and is not afraid to try different proven techniques or methods of teaching. Ladies and gentlemen, the world today is awash with innovation in adult education, and yet much of it remains unused in medical education because we, the medical community, are resistant to change. I'm sure we have all experienced that we've done it for many years. Why change attitude? There is currently a vacuum in our specialty. There is no appropriate forum to train our young clinicians and ourselves as educators, to train ourselves to be better teachers. And I bring this subject here today because I believe that the Trilogical Society can help fill this vacuum and can help break this resistance by serving as a resourceful partner to the Association of Program Directors in Otolaryngology and the Society of University Otolaryngologists in putting together some of the resources that we need to educate the educators in otolaryngology. And we ran this through the Executive Council and through the Executive Committee and the Council yesterday, and they have given the green light to proceed in this direction. I hope I have provided some food for thought regarding the changes that we can and must make if we are to continue to succeed as educators, as bridge builders. To move more confidently in that direction, it might help us to remember the words of someone who knew a great deal about change and evolution, Charles Darwin, who said, "It is not the strongest of the species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsive to change." Thank you very much for your attention. And now we have to, discharge one of the, I think, very important responsibilities of the leadership of this organization when we give these research awards that are so important and of which we are so proud. Can we have the slide? So these are the Career Development Awards and the Career Scientist Awards. Here's the list of all the individuals that have been awarded this important grants. And I know that there are a few of them that are here. Gail, they're here. So we will... call them forward. Dr. Ann E. Goetz from the Washington University School of Medicine. Is she here? There she comes. Yeyakar Nayak from Stanford University School of Medicine. And Bruce K. Tan, MD, Dr. Tan. And there he comes. We are so proud of these young individuals that received these grants. It is really a pleasure to do this. And now we move on to a historic event. Can I have the Brookhauser Award slides, please? And I am so glad, that I get the distinct honor of awarding the first Patrick E. Brookhauser Award. And I am delighted that his wife, Maria, is here today to join us in commemorating this occasion. Maria, would you stand so we can recognize you? As many of you in this audience know, Pat Brookhauser contributed immensely to our specialty during his professional lifetime. Pat was an effective and visionary leader who, unlike many such leaders, was not aloof, but very down to earth and very friendly. He was gifted with a keen ability to bring a group to consensus in a genteel manner, and he had a great sense of humor, as we were all know. You could hardly ever get together with Pat without hearing some Irish joke. Above all, Pat was a respected colleague and a great friend to most of us. Pat served the specialty and the community at large in an exemplary manner. He served as director of the American Board of Otolaryngology and was chairman of the Residency Review Committee for Otolaryngology. Outside of the specialty, he was the founding director of Boys Town Institute for Communication Disorders in Children, which is now the Boys Town National Research Hospital. But among all his commitments, Pat demonstrated an exceptional dedication to the Trilogical Society. He loved this society, and he was a central figure in its leadership for many years. He served as executive secretary and as president. And following his presidency in 2006, he was reappointed as the executive secretary, a position he held until his untimely death. For his extraordinary service, he was awarded the Trilogical Society Gold Medal in 2009. It is thus fitting that the executive committee and the council of the Trilogical Society decided to honor his memory by creating the Patrick E. Brookhauser Award for Excellence. The purpose of this award is to recognize an individual who has made significant or scientific or service contributions to the Trilogical Society, the specialty of otolaryngology, or the profession of medicine. And I am delighted to announce that the first recipient of the Patrick E. Brookhauser Award is Gerald B. Healy. And who does not know Dr. Healy in this audience? He's the Emeritus Surgeon in Chief and the Emeritus Gerald B. Healy Chair in Otolaryngology at Children's Hospital in Boston. And he's a professor of otology and laryngology at Harvard Medical School. Well, having been part of the selection process, I can tell you that Dr. Healy was selected to receive this award because he embodies what the award intends to recognize, and that is excellence. First and foremost, he is an outstanding doctor. Second, he is a forward-thinking thinker and a prolific scholar, renowned for his pioneering work with laser surgery in children. He has conducted NIH-funded research addressing diseases affecting infants and children, and he's the author, as you know, of several books, book chapters, and has published extensively in peer-reviewed journals. Last but not least, Dr. Healy is the epitome of the servant leader. He is a member of numerous professional societies, and because of the dedication and energy he brings into everything he does, it is natural for him to move up the ranks and attain a position of leadership. As such, he has served as director and executive vice president of the American Board of Otolaryngology. He has served as president of the Massachusetts chapter of the American College of Surgeons, the American Society for Pediatric Otolaryngology, the American Bronchoesophagological Association, and this very Trilogic Society. He has been chairman of the Board of Regents of the American College of Surgeons and was the first, and as far as I know, the only otolaryngologist to be elected president of the American College of Surgeons. In addition, Dr. Healy has served as trustee of the Children's Hospital in Boston and is currently a trustee at Boys Town National Research Hospital. Finally, it must be noted that like Pat Brookhauser, Dr. Healy's service to the Trilogical Society has been extraordinary. Since becoming a member in 1982, he has served the Society in countless capacities. Most recently, he was the Deputy Executive Secretary at the time of Pat's sudden passing. Dr. Healy was asked by the council to step into the role of interim executive secretary, a job he accepted without hesitation, a job he has done exceptionally well steering the society through this time of transition. And for that, we are very thankful to Jerry. And it is now my pleasure to call to the podium the 2013 and first recipient of the Patrick E. Brookhauser Award, Dr. Jerry Healy. Jerry. This reads that the American Laryngological, Rhinological, and Otological Society, a.k.a. the Trilogical Society, is proud to present the Patrick E. Brookhauser MD Award for Excellence to Gerald B. Healy, who has made significant service and scientific contributions to the Trilogical Society and Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery. The recipient embodies and perpetuates the ideals of the Trilogical Society and the leader, mentor, scholar, and clinician for whom this award is named. Congratulations.
You'll have to excuse me for... Irish guys do this. That Patrick picture, my favorite Irishman. To Maria. I am overwhelmed at this honor. Patrick was my friend, my mentor, my confidant. But he had a unique character trait among all the other wonderful things that he was as a human being. He always celebrated other people's success. I will never forget when I was honored to be named president of the College of Surgeons. The very first person that called me was Patrick. And I must tell you that he was more thrilled about that than I was. And I was pretty happy. For some of you younger folks in the audience, you probably didn't have the honor and pleasure of knowing this wonderful person, who, in my view, saved this organization at a time when it went through a serious crisis. And together with his great team, we're sitting over there from Omaha, stepped in and did what had to be done to save the noble legacy. So I am humbled, but I know he's up there with hands on shoulders. Take care, my friend. Thank you.
And how timely it is that I must make an important announcement this morning before we break. After a search process that spanned several months and was directed by the Executive Council and the Council of the Trilogical Society, we have selected an individual to succeed Dr. Healy in the position and our beloved Pat Brookhauser in the position of Executive Vice President of the Trilogical Society, and that individual is Dr. Miles Pensack. Please help me. Miles, would you stand? We congratulate him and we wish him great success. Thank you very much. We now stand adjourned.